Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody. It is Erev Parshas Korach in the year 5771. And I missed you last week. I was away, and we had Rabbi Michal Friedman for Shalach, and now we're on to Korach. But I will try to mention something about Shalach, as I try to do whenever I miss. Just a quick orientation for those of you who are new or revisiting. We have a theme. Every year we have a theme, and this year's theme is Basics of Torah Reality. When we started the book of Bamidbar, we decided, it was a very democratic decision there, that Bamidbar focuses on the Jewish people, as in people and the nature of people, and helping us navigate all of the peoplehood about us. That's very different than the book of Vayikra, which is God talking and saying, this is what I expect of you. These are the commandments. Now do them. Little is mentioned about how are the people with our human realities going to accomplish all of those things that God expects us to accomplish. People are not perfect. People are not God. And that is the function of Parshas of Sefer Bamidbar, to go very light on the mitzvos and very heavy on people. And in these parshios that we're dealing with now, really starting from Beha'aloscha, then Shalach, then Korach, and even into Chukas, and we'll see, we are finding out that people, even great people, can make mistakes and are driven by various, what we would call midos, character traits, which are not so pretty all the time. And these parshios are very, very important for us to study and to learn what our tradition, our Torah, our sages teach us about midos. After all, the study of midos and work on character development is one of the most important things that a Jew can do. And it is one of the most important areas of Torah study that a person can engage in, because this is our job. Our job is to work on ourselves and to develop ourselves to the point where we get a handle and we improve in the area of midos. So I'm going to call this class Basics of Midos Part 2. We started it with last time we met the Ha'aloscha. We pointed out that man is a composite, as we know, of different components. We have a physical side with physical, you know, drives and physical qualities. We have a nefesh, which is some people call the animal soul. It also moves into the area of emotions. We have a lot of emotions. We have a lot of feelings. We have a lot of wants. They're not necessarily physical. The desire for recognition, the desire for honor, jealousy, the feeling of arrogance, the feeling of autonomy, independence. These are all manifestations of our nefesh. We also have a seichel. We have a very, very great endowment in our mental and our intellectual capacities. We are capable of fathoming tremendous, tremendous amounts and depth of knowledge of all kinds. And we also have a neshama. We have a spark of the divine, which also plays in there. Although, as I believe I have discovered in the course of our many years together, that our neshama is really not so dominant within us at this time in history. It is hidden, like is the Shekhinah. Like Hashem says, I will hide my Shekhinah, I will hide myself, and you will have to find me. Well, I think the same thing goes with our neshama. Our neshama is, for all intents and purposes, very, very hidden, and we have to struggle to find it. All we are aware of, in order of prominence, is our body first. We sure know about our bodies. We're pretty aware of our feelings and our animal instincts. And we're a little bit aware of our intellect, although our intellect, for the most part, is greatly underdeveloped. Hashem instructs us, as one of the most important mitzvahs of the Torah, to study the Torah and put Torah intellect and Torah wisdom into your minds. Unfortunately, if you look at the Jewish world as a whole, we have very little Torah wisdom and Torah knowledge in our minds. You know, some of us have accomplished in other areas of knowledge of wisdom, Baruch Hashem, some more than others, but how many of us can actually say we possess Torah knowledge, Torah wisdom? So it's an uphill battle. And here's a question that we posed 2 weeks ago, which I'd like to delve back into. When I say the word I am, who is the I? Who am I? The old existential question. Who am I? Am I my body? Am I my animal soul? Am I my intellect? I once shared, years ago, we had a class on this, and I read a book. And this book was trying to demonstrate that the I, the real I, is our soul, our godly soul. Now, I think that that statement, it has to be understood in context. What this author was trying to do was convince us that we will have an afterlife. And so this author was trying to tell us that we're not just our bodies, because our bodies are going to transition one day, but we are still going to exist. So I think that was the context of that thesis. Our I is our eternal soul. But in our context, in the context of what makes us tick, who is the I that wakes up every morning, that steps out into the street, that moves about? It's not our godly soul. It may be our body, it may be our animal soul, but the I has to be truly found and identified. So I would like to address that question again. Who is the I? I think we're going to discover something very basic, a little deep, but basic nonetheless to understanding what the Torah teaches us about ourselves. The other question I wanted to address today is, what guidance are we given by our sages and by our tradition in terms of how to work on our midos, how to fight that uphill battle, and how to develop ourselves properly? So those are really the two questions I want to address today. Who is the I, and how do I work on self-improvement? We see from this parsha and from last parsha, Shlach and Korach, that everybody has to work and has to fight against bad midos. We have Meraglim, 10 spies last week. The Torah testifies that we're all great men. 10 of them came back and ruined it for the Jewish people. Korach, in this week's parsha, a great man, a Levi, one of the wisest, one of the holiest, he got himself swallowed up into under the surface of the earth, never to come out. Why? Bad midos. Bad midos. Do you remember that Rabbi Luzzatto in Mesilas Yesharim, the Encyclopedia of Midos, teaches us that both Korach and the Meraglim fell into the abyss because of their desire for honor. Which Rabbi Lutzatzer says, a desire for honor in a person is stronger than a desire for money and wealth and pleasure. It is the desire for honor that, according to our sages of blessed memory, this is a reference to the Zohar, but pretty well known, that's what led the spies to slander the land of Israel, thus bringing death upon themselves and that whole generation. This was brought about by their fear that their honor might be diminished upon entering Eretz Yisrael, because others might replace them as Israel's Nesi'im, leaders of the tribes. They thought that in Israel that's going to be a new administration, and out with the old and in with the new. And subliminally, they said, we can't go to the land of Israel. The Zohar says their real motivation was their desire for honor or their fear for loss of honor. Korach, what caused Korach to perish along with him, his whole entourage? It was only the desire for honor. It is stated explicitly, and now you wish to have the priesthood as well. That's in this parsha. The sages of blessed memory related that all of this was the result of Korach seeing Elitzaphan ben Uziel, who was his cousin, chosen as Nasi, leader of their tribe, for Korach desired to be Nasi in his place. These are great men. How do great men fall to bad nidos? What happened to their righteousness? What happened to their Torah? What happened to their wisdom? And if they fall because of bad midos, what hope is there for us? So let's try to gain just a little bit of insight into this area. Who are we? Who's boss? How do I control and fall and protect myself from falling prey to those bad midos? Rabbi Wolbe, this is the real Rabbi Wolbe Sefer, the one that's advanced, that's for yeshiva students, and it's all Hebrew, not the one that I always quote, Pathways. But this is like the heavier duty. Rabbi Wolbe, who is the great Musar master of our generation, no longer with us, unfortunately, but his students and his teachings, his writings are, he writes that inside this compartment within us called Da'as, knowledge, there are two components. There is the intellectual knowledge. There is this vast capacity within every single human being, not just Jews. Every single human being has this huge capacity to gain knowledge, to understand things from, the molecular level to the outer space. And everything in between. There's no end to that. There's another component of das, of wisdom, of knowledge, which he says, and I was surprised by this, he says, this is the portion for the Jews. This is the Jews' special portion of das. He bokas v'yoredes, I'm going to quote, read a couple of quotes here. He bokas v'yoredes ata homos gufaniutso. This das bores and penetrates into the depths of his physicality, into the depths of his body, umeachedes hamidos vehakochos, and unites the character traits and all of its faculties, the midos, im hahasaga shebamoach, together with the intellectual knowledge in the brain. He unites them. He unifies. He integrates the knowledge in his mind with the midos in his animal soul and body. Shaloti sho'er kol stira beinehem, so that there is no conflict between them. This is the da'as that the Jews were given the commandment and the capacity to achieve. I once heard a story, it's just comical, that there was this professor of ethics in in university, in a well-known university, who was known to be a pretty unethical person. And he was once accosted. He says, how can you, a teacher of ethics, be unethical? And he says, and if I'm a mathematician and I teach about geometry, does that mean I have to be a triangle? That was his response. Does my understanding, my intellectual knowledge, have to at all correspond to my own conduct? That's my business. This is what I do. This is my profession. This is my career. This is not what I do in my private life. This is the first kind of das without the second kind of das. So, the answer to our question of how could great people fall to bad midos? It is because their intellectual das was very well developed, but it wasn't integrated into this deeper kind of das that unifies all the different aspects of his person. There was a disconnect between the knowledge in his brain and his inability to fuse that with his midos. We said before, the bodily drives, the animal soul drives are stronger. We are born with them. We're not born with a developed intellect. That has to be developed, that has to be worked on, and it's not easy to study, to learn, to humble ourselves, to be able to learn is something that requires work. Having bodily drives does not require work. It's natural. Therefore, it requires work to develop this kind of das. This work has to be serious, it has to be deliberate, and it's slow. It takes a long time. Let me just read a couple of things. What we're talking about now is the basic premise of Musar, the basic premise of the human condition in terms of how does he train himself to be an ethical person, to have good midos, to allow his midos to come out. People may be off guard insofar. This is Rabbi Avraham Tversky in his commentary on Mesilas Yesharim. People may be off guard insofar as character traits are concerned. It is more difficult to be aware of improper traits than of deeds. And since traits are internal phenomena, a person might think that they are all that harmful. The fact is, however, that ultimately all behavior is but the end product of their traits. Some people may also take a position of, that's the way I am. I was born this way. And assume that their character is cast in stone and that they are not responsible for their traits. While there is no denying that there are genetic factors that affect traits, and that many traits are the result of influences of our early childhood experiences, we are nevertheless not prisoners of genes or upbringing, and we can make salutary changes in our character traits. If we don't accept this premise, then we're not even playing the game of real Jewish growth. One other thing about the need to work on it slowly and deliberately. When Rabbi Akiva first began to study Torah, this is from Rabbi Zvi Miller, who is a big proponent of Musar teachings of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter and others, and he's contemporary. When Rabbi Akiva first began to study Torah, he expected to experience rapid change within himself. Remember, he used to be a head of thieves. However, after a short period of study, he realized that he had neither changed his character traits, nor did he sense an awe of Hashem. He assumed that his situation was hopeless, and that he had become too late in life to be affected by his learning. Therefore, he abandoned his Torah studies in frustration. However, when he saw the groove that the water had carved into the rock, I'm assuming people have heard the story, that he was inspired by seeing water drip on a rock, and it had formed a groove. So he had a life-altering insight. Each second, in every word of Torah he learns, makes an imperceptible subconscious impression. Just as the water running over the rock is not expected to make an instantaneous deep groove, so too the learning of Torah does not render instantaneous healing of the soul. However, the continuous study of Torah over time will bring about a thorough healing of the soul. Every word of Torah that one learns makes a subconscious impression. With each Musar session, more and more impressions are made in the heart. Ultimately, these impressions accumulate and render a change in nature. The soul is healed, and the subject is transformed to a different person. Therefore, we should be greatly encouraged and inspired that there is an easy treatment that we can apply on a regular basis, which results in dramatic spiritual development. That easy treatment is study Torah, study Musar. So, let's tackle our first question, and then we'll go quickly on to the second. Who am I? Who am I? I'm not my body. Because my body is this, like, animal inside of me. I don't know why I did that. Right? How could I do such a thing? Even our animal soul, even our emotions sometimes get the better of us. Am I my seichel? Am I my intellect? We've seen from the professor that I'm not my intellect either. My intellect is some vast storage container of knowledge. It doesn't necessarily translate into my actions. So who am I? You know what Rabbi Volbe says? This is kind of like the punchline. One of the punchlines. Nekudas atzmuso shel ha'adam hi nekudas ha'kesher bein ha'seichel v'yamidos. The point of selfness of a man is the point of intersection between the mind and the midos. That's who you are.
Could you repeat that?
Yes. But I don't know if I understand it any better. The nekudas atzmuso shel ha'adam, the point of selfness of a man, he nekudas ha'kesher bein ha'seichel v'yamidos. It is a point of intersection between the mind and the midos. At that area where you are able to take your knowledge and actually have it affect and direct your midos, how you act, how you emote, that is yourself. If you have knowledge that you cannot use to control your midos, that's not yourself. When you have expressions of your body or of your emotions that is out of control and you can't control them with your mind, that's not yourself. Yourself is that point of intersection. I remember, you know, Venn diagrams used to have one circle was set A, one circle was set B, and then they intersected, and that was called the intersection set from grade school. That's you. Where the seichel and the midos interface, where the seichel has control over the midos. And that's probably a range also, because we're not always the same. We probably have a certain range where we, you know, vacillate. One day we'll be stronger in that mind control. Some days we'll be weaker. But there is an area where we're there. We are able to integrate our seichel and our midos together. That's the us. And we can work with that, and that can grow. And that brings us to our second and final point, which is, so how do we do it? What's the basic prescription for becoming a greater person, becoming a greater mind over midos person? There's a lot of things, but I think some of the top answers are develop our seichel. Get as much seichel from the Torah that we can, because it is the seichel of the Torah. It is the knowledge of learning Torah that is going to have the effect over our midos. As the sages teach us, God created the evil inclination within us, and He created the one and only antidote, the Torah. Study it, imbibe it, and you will see it will help you grow. Number two, let that study of Torah include Musar. Let it include these very topics. Sure, anything that we study, even if it's technical, even if it's about various laws that we do, will help. But let us not neglect the study of Midos, the study of Musar, the study of fear of Hashem, the study of what is our ultimate purpose. Let us not forget to remind ourselves constantly of these important ideas. This has to also go beyond book study. You can read a book, you can read a page, and you can say, got it. But we've got to translate it to ourselves. And that requires separate and independent work called hisponinus, contemplation, personal stuff, personal introspection, goal making, accounting. It's got to be personal. You've got to be able to talk about these subjects with yourself and realize, I'm not going to change at all if I don't try to change, if I don't make a plan, if I don't check myself, if I don't question. And number four is, I think this is powerful, a powerful part of it, that we need other people's help. We need other people's help. We need to be able to be what we call in yeshiva jargon, we need to be makabel. We need to accept hadracha, guidance and direction from others. You see, there is an advantage that somebody else has over me with respect to me and my midos. He doesn't have the same midos that I do. Impartial to my bad midos. When I think about myself, I'm partial. I want to be right. I want to continue acting the way I am. If I'm selfish, I want to be selfish. I'm going to have a hard time telling my selfish self not to be selfish, because I'm the one that wants to be selfish. But if I tell to my friend, you know, what do you think about my mido of selfishness? He can see right to it without any partiality. He can say, yeah, you're a little selfish. And then you can check with him. So we need to be able to listen to other people who can guide us. It could be on the level of peers, and it can be on the level of teachers. But we need other people. You know who the worst person, you know who the most unfortunate and the most sorrowful person in reference to this job of working on midos is? Somebody that doesn't want to listen to anyone else. Somebody that just wants to be their own person, and I don't care what anybody else says. That person is in bad shape. Because nobody can cure their bad midos by themselves. And with this, I'd like to bring it back to Korach and end off with an observation that I thought of with Hashem's help. Korach, we asked, how can great people fall? So I don't know about the Meraglim, but you know what happened to Korach? In the beginning of the Parsha, it says, Vayikach Korach. Korach separated himself. It's a difficult phrase to explain, because it says Korach took, and there's no object of his taking. He took what? So Rashi and Unkelos say he took himself. And this was the beginning of his downfall. He separated himself. Once a person separates himself, there's nowhere else to go but to the bottom of the earth. Because that means you're not going to listen to anyone. You're not going to accept guidance. You're not going to accept criticism. You're only going to be wrapped up in your own partiality. And it doesn't matter how great you are. We all have to struggle with midos. And one of the only ways we can save ourselves is by not being alone, by allowing ourselves to be influenced. So I was at Shavuot Brachos this week for Ben and Shana. And I said, Krohn, that's the wedding that the Rudnick spoke of earlier, and I said, you guys are so fortunate because now you have each other and now you're not alone. And if you have someone else, you have somebody that will check you, that will be able to be a sounding board and an impartial other party to look at you and to say, I see things that you can't even see about yourself. Get with it. And by the way, we can't put it all on other people. We've got to take responsibility for ourselves, and we can if we follow these steps. But part of that is letting other people advise us. So that was my wedding message. I said we learned this from Korach. And then I got home, and my wife said, there's just one problem with your Devar Torah. I said, what's that? See, I listened to her. She said, Korach was also married. And according to our sages, his wife made him do it. She didn't save him. She instigated him. She said, look, Moshe is trying to take all the honor. He doesn't want you to have any of the glory. Why don't you go rebel? So my wife said, you see, it doesn't help. It was a good question. I thought about it, and then I said, that's right. To a person who doesn't want to be Mekabel, who doesn't want to accept, no one's going to help him. In fact, Chazal say that when a person has merit, his wife is his Ezer. You know, it says in the beginning of the Torah, Hashem said to Adam, or he said to himself, I will create an Ezer Kinegdo, I will create an helpmate, a helpmate opposite him. And the sages say, a helpmate opposite him? It sounds like two opposites. Helpmate helps you. Opposite opposes you. So the Chazal say that's right. Zacha, Ezer. If he merits, she will help him. Lo Zacha, if he doesn't merit, Minag Daso, she will oppose him. So I'm thinking, not everyone's wife will help him. So depends whether he merits or not. And that meriting means, is he willing to accept guidance and criticism? So, if he would have been open to others, he would have had the kind of a wife that would help him to overcome his midos. Because he was not a Mekabel, because he wasn't someone who wanted to listen to others and accept guidance, he got a Menagdoso. He got somebody that was his nemesis, was his downfall. So it's actually a very good example of how a wife can, and it supports the point. My wife was saying, you see from here that it doesn't help to have somebody else because the other person might make you go. That depends on you. That depends on your attitude. It all starts with being a Mekabel. So I'd like to conclude and say that there's a lot of midos. There's a lot of midos that we have to work on, but there's like something called a super mida. It's my own terminology. And that super mida is being willing to be Mekabel, to being willing to accept guidance and not saying, I'm by myself, I don't care what anybody else thinks. That is the super mida. If we accept, have the humility to say that I know a lot of things, but I'm not perfect. And because I'm not perfect, I have to allow myself to be guided, influenced, inspired by other people. Then you will have a better chance, and you'll be on the road to improvement in the area of midos. Thank you very much for listening. Shkoa. Dina.
One thing I think it should be added to your list of how do we do it, and that is what I heard Rabbi Emanuel say many, many years ago, and that is fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times that I've behaved in ways that didn't come naturally to me, but I knew it was the way to behave, and I made myself do it, you know, with the idea that the way you do it, it's part of it.
Very good. Now, in that instance, you are actually at the very high level of high self-awareness, where you can actually see that your seichel tells you something, your seichel is telling you up here, you see that in your midos you're down here, but you have the strength of character the selfness where you can actually control and you can say, I'm going to let my seichel control me, and not the other way around, which is to say, well, I don't feel like doing that, therefore I'm not going to do it. So what you're illustrating is how a person can actually elevate themselves by letting their seichel dictate to their midos, and not their midos dictating to their seichel. A person who is overcome by his midos is likely to convince himself and develop all kinds of rationalizations where he thinks that his seichel is saying it's not a good thing to do, and it's really just his midos talking. That person has no control. What you're describing is a strategy that a person can use to allow their seichel to dictate, to be the boss. And that is what we're shooting for. And that can come with training. And you got that because you listened to somebody who gave you guidance, and you accepted it, and you employed it. That's work. That's called working on yourself. Beautiful, beautiful. Yes?
That's an interesting point. When you were talking about the intersection of the das and the mouth.
The seichel and the midos. That's your true das, that's your true self, yes.
So when you were describing it, it sounded to me like something that was, you know, you were describing it as, you know, could be that it's a range, and I was thinking of it in terms of each and every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Like finding it in that space,
mm-hmm.
each and every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And what Ms. Conover said just now lit a bulb in my head that
mm-hmm.
it's easy to think in the moment about not having that intersection be in a certain place,
mm-hmm.
being on two different levels, and saying, well, I'm not there yet. But
mm-hmm.
being allowed to hone that in, and
mm-hmm.
despite the gap, still be able to.
Yes.
That's very powerful.
Yes, very good. That process, that strategy is really described in the Mesilas Yesharim, in the chapter on Zrizus, on alacrity, where he says that basically what Rabbi Feldman said is that you can act something even if you don't feel it. Lo lishma, or it's really the power of actions over feelings, I think. And if you feel lethargic and lackadaisical, but you say, I'm going to pretend that I'm enthusiastic. He says, if you act enthusiastically, even though you lack the inner desire, you will find that inner desire growing. And that is exactly that's a strategy. But a person would only take that strategy if there's a certain degree of control. Otherwise, I'm not there yet is going to be his, you know, his answer. Sorry, I'm not there. That's not me. It's a little deep, but it's basic because there cannot be Jewish growth. You know, Judaism is not just membership into a club where you join, you pay your dues, and you're there. The real basic concept of Torah is that we work on ourselves and we grow from, you know, from where we were to the next level. It's not only observance, it's midos. It's control of midos, and it's integrating our what we feel like doing with what we know we should be doing. Okay, thank you. Wendy.
As we're working on ourselves and what you're talking about, how we help one another,
mm-hmm.
that's the whole key that I see, and the more that I study,
mm-hmm.
that we are here, whether or not we have an actual marriage per se, that we are a collective Jewish
yes,
soul.
Yes.
We are married to Ha and Kadosh Baruch Hu. We're married to one another,
mm-hmm.
in regard to helping
yes.
us achieve the ultimate, where we are all totally elevated and
yes.
we bring in each one along with us.
Yes, Yasher Kala for saying that. Right, right. As we talked about when we spoke about marriage way on the beginning of the year, that marriage is a concept, and it's a concept of people not being alone in their journey, and it can be accomplished in so many ways. But at the elemental level, it's just not being alone, in this world. And anybody who embraces Torah, anyone who embraces community, is making that declaration, I am not alone. And they will be treated as such. If they see themselves as part, they will be treated as part.